Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans. We're here every week talking about loads of things that go on in the theme park industry. I'm Bex, this is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And this week, I'm delighted to say we are joined by another theme park. If you were listening last week, we were chatting to Josh from Creeley. This time, we are going slightly over some waters, but we're staying within the UK, and we are heading to Black Gang Chine. I'm delighted to get you guys on the podcast. We've got Laura Baxter, who's the head of marketing, and we've got Dan White, who's the general manager of Black Gang Chine. Welcome to Parkcast, guys.
Hello, well, thanks for having us.
Oh, you are so welcome. I'm so chuffed that I've managed to get you guys on because Black Gang Chine is such an iconic park in the UK. Obviously, a totally historical park. So much history and legacy to it. But it is one that often doesn't get talked about a lot outside of enthusiast circles. So I just thought, let's get you guys on. Let's make sure we understand what the park's all about and let's have a good chat about it, a big nerdy chat. So I'm delighted that you guys are here. First of all, tell me about the park. We know that it's the UK's oldest theme park. Dan, do you want to give us a bit of an oversight of how the park came about and what its foundations were, where it started?
Yeah, so the park or the attraction Black Gang Chine was found in 1843. There's a well-known, or hopefully well-known, story about the whale skeleton washing up, and that was then hauled uphill to Black Gang, and then that started a visitor attraction.
Okay.
Want to add on that, Laura?
Yeah, so it was obviously 1843 peak Victorian era where morbid curiosities were quite a big thing, kind of like Greatest Showman style side circuses, that kind of thing. And yeah, when a fin whale, which is absolutely huge, washed up, Alexander de Bell had the great idea to have it stripped of all of its blubber, get the bones bleached and put it on display. And the Victorians went nuts for it. They loved it coming to see this, because wow. It's absolutely extraordinary when you see it in real life. You don't realise how massive these animals are. So it was really quite a revolutionary thing for Victorians to see. And even Queen Victoria herself came and saw it. And as our current owner, Alec, will tell you, it only took a few years after that that her and Albert put a whale skeleton in the Natural History Museum. So wonder where the inspiration came from.
Wow. Okay, that's cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so people came literally like from over the channel to the Isle of Wight to come and see it, especially.
They used to have what are called charabangs, like big, what were Victorian coaches, I suppose. It was how group travel happened back then. And yeah, they used to arrive in their masses to revel at this incredible whale skeleton. And there was a big hotel in the middle of the land as well, which we still have that building now. That's our main F&B outlet, the Chine Cafe. That's where you go and get your lunch if you come to Black Gang. So people would stay there and then go and look at this bunch of bones. And that was a great day out back
and
in,
that
the,
was it.
In
and
the 1800s.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like a great day out now, to be honest. I don't know why you bothered putting any attractions in.
Yeah, I don't need any rides.
Yeah. No. Are the bones still there?
Still there. So you can still come and see the original attraction today. You can walk through it. We have an actual whale room, and on the walls, it's kind of got all of the stories and timeline of our history in there. But the bones are still there. You can walk through them. They take the entire length of the room up as well. So yeah, it's quite cool as a kid and even as an adult as well to stand in a whale's belly. You're literally there in the rib cage thinking, oh my gosh, I've just been swallowed by a whale. So yeah, really, really imaginative, extraordinary exhibit to have in the park still.
It's probably the most unique way that a theme park has been started. I can't think of anywhere else that has started with a washed up skeleton, and to still have them, actually, that is so cool, because there's a lot of places that I think probably wouldn't have preserved history in that way. So that's really cool that you've done that, and you can literally trace the park right back to its roots. Yeah, how fascinating.
I mean, the best thing is located next to the Hall of Mirrors now. So if the whale skeleton's not your thing either, then you can go to the Hall of Mirrors next door. So all in the same building, which is cool.
Hopefully you don't have the same issue with the Hall of Mirrors as Josh did from Creeley last week, who told us within 2 weeks of installing his Hall of Mirrors, he had a guest with a broken nose.
Oh, no.
Yeah. dangerous things, these halls of mirrors. They seem like such an innocent attraction. Okay, so that kind of got people over to the island, and then it sort of started Black Gang China as an attraction. How did it develop from there? What came next?
It was mainly sort of, I mean, the island anyway is obviously a holiday destination. It always has been. I think the biggest thing for Black Gang sort of development wise was the lights, the access, the old access to the beach. There's light trails from top to bottom, various different routes to go down there. Obviously that opened up a lot of the old China area, which currently isn't here anymore, obviously with something we've had to anyway is Eurasian, but that sort of really transformed people's love for Black Gang. And I think the sort of memories that were made from sort of 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. in the old opening hours was something that really put it on the map.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's always going to be a challenge, I guess, for you. And Laura, this is probably one of your challenges as the head of marketing, to go, yes, we've obviously got our core audience on the island, but we need to get people over that body of water to get here. What would you say was probably a turning point in kind of making it more well known to the people outside of the Isle of Wight and getting people to travel across from the UK? Or do you still think it is just generally holiday traffic that gets people over there?
Yeah, it definitely is. So I would say, I mean, Dan, we'll have to run some kind of more up-to-date postcode data to double check, but I'd be so bold as to say probably 75% of our visitors annually are tourists that come over from the mainland. The Isle of Wight itself only has a population of 142,000, and we actually have an aging population as well, so that means over 60% of our population are over 60, so we don't have a huge amount of a family market on the island to actually get in. You know, the ones that are here are amazing, and you know, they buy their season passes and they're our members and they come regularly, but our peak periods are absolutely supported by tourists. That's definitely something that I would say has become more of a challenge over the years. I think back when Black Gang China, as Dan says, in the days of the Illuminations, was at its absolute peak, was because domestic travel was also at its peak. You know, people didn't go abroad for their holidays. You went to a coastal seaside town, you went to the Isle of Wight, you might have gone inland to country if you were somebody who lived in a coastal town. You couldn't just hop on a cheap package aeroplane deal and go to Europe. So the staycation itself has obviously declined over the years. That does make it more of a challenge. I do think we're just starting to see the tides turn slightly on that. I think the staycation's kind of coming back. I mean, this year, potentially in a huge way, thanks to the global situation we've got going on with fuel. Hopefully the Isle of Wight will be able to capitalise on that. Likewise, our friends down at like Creeley and Camel Creek in Cornwall, we hope everyone has a great season. But it is a huge challenge, because as much as it is an icon, Black Gang China is iconic, it's probably not enough on its own to make you cross the water. So we have to work collaboratively with other island businesses to showcase just what the Isle of Wight has to offer. And you've got to convince people on the Isle of Wight. And then, of course, once you're here, part of your itinerary is that you come to Black Gang China. But we've got to show them there's enough of a pool to bring them over for a couple of days, a long weekend, or a whole week's holiday, and look at all this other amazing stuff that's going to fill your week full of memories, and it's going to be great. But of course, your best day out is going to be a day at Black Gang China.
I guess that's the thing, because now we have a lot of social media influence as well. So when I was growing up, we used to holiday at the Isle of Wight, but you'd only know about it because you travel there and you get the little leaflets like you do when you go on holiday and go, oh, there's Robin Hill. Oh, look, there's Black Gang China as well. But now, have you noticed any change through the power of like content creators, social media, YouTube, people who visit, film Black Gang China? Do you notice a change in that way?
Absolutely. I think it's for a park like us that has these additional challenges, it's absolutely invaluable that you can have that reach and have it in a more cost-effective way. You know, typically print and then distribution, if you want to get the leaflets or whatever it might be out, not a cheap thing to do, right? That's quite a tricky thing to do. Likewise, digital paid is also an expensive thing to do. When you've got content creators who are genuine fans and can come and show off the park, either from a perspective that they are a theme park fanatic, an attractions fanatic, whether it's mums showcasing days out for families, or whether it's people who genuinely love the UK and want to showcase destinations and hidden gems and all that kind of thing. We've been so incredibly lucky. I think because Black Gang China has been here for so long, we have a legacy brand. And that means there are people, exactly as you've just said, Kev, that would have come as children that are now famous adults, some, more so than others. For example, we have the most wonderful relationship with the Sugg family. Zoe and Joe came every year as children. They say Black Gang China is their Disneyland. And we were lucky enough that
Amazing.
last year, when we had an opportunity as part of the Jolly Robin, our pirate ship that went into Black Gang China, the maintenance team restored one of our old talking bins. So Black Gang China has got bins very similar to the Efteling ones that talk as you go round. Zoe's daughter Otty was obsessed with one of our bins, absolutely loved it. Joe made her own bin at home. He replicated a Black Gang China bin, which was extraordinary. So that content in itself went viral and did great things. So when I then walked around to look at the Jolly Robin and saw, I had no idea the maintenance team were putting this bin in, I saw it and I was like, oh, I know who can voice this. So I messaged Joe. Joe agreed to voice it. Joe then made all of this amazing content around it, as did we. It even won a Theme Park UK award for best marketing campaign. It came third, got the bronze award, and it got us a huge amount of coverage. And unbelievably now, it's an attraction in its own right because people come to the park just to hear the Joe Sugg bin because he's got his own fan base. So it's absolutely extraordinary what those partnerships can do for brands and for parks, and especially for people like us, that is quite a niche little thing that probably exists in a lot of people's childhood memories. To be able to nudge them with that and unlock all of that, and then think, oh my God, yeah, well, I'm a parent now. I want to go back and experience it with my kids. So we're really lucky that we have that multi-generational and nostalgic pull as well. And if you happen to get some famous faces that also feel like that, that's obviously hugely beneficial for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's testament to the park, though, that there's one thing to have nostalgia, but that can also be a curse. If you have a childhood memory of somewhere, you go back and you're like, this isn't as I remembered it, and I don't like it anymore, or it's gone downhill. So the fact that people are coming back who visited as kids and go, I still love this. This still embodies what I felt as a child, shows that the park hasn't lost its magic. So that must be really like a great feeling for you guys to think we still do have that appeal, even though you haven't gone down the route of, installing a huge giga coaster or something like that. You have managed to retain your magic and it hasn't been lost.
Yeah, I think that's echoed with our latest ride install, the train ride here in the Rio Grande Zamperla train ride. With that, we could have gone multiple ways with how to theme that. Ultimately, it's the BG Express, Black Gang Express. So with that, we had an opportunity to, we're never one to, whilst we're probably guilty of overstoring things at Black Gang, probably because of this nostalgia, not wanting to ever chuck anything away, which is at times testing, depending on what it is, but we had a lot of old characters that had previously been in the park up to 15 to about 25 years ago that obviously people would come and take pictures of, and we have a, I'd say we have a good fan base locally on the island and our mainland UK of people that share their memories all the time, and old historical wildlife pages are, this is me back in 1970 with these figurines, these models, etc. So when you then, people just assume you get rid of them. So when you return them, that went down very well with our local demographic and the opening of the ride. And I just think that that's something that we care about. We don't like to necessarily just shut a door on things. We store things, keep it, and one day it always seems to make a return. For example, the bin that got refurbished that Laura was just talking about, again, that had been in storage for 10, 15 years, but it doesn't get chucked away. It gets restored, and then you hold that sort of, old school but modern look.
Yeah, what's the percentage balance like then, Dan, with that? When you look at preserving and maintaining historical and old elements of the park to adding brand new things, what's the balance like?
That's a good question. I mean, in recent years, obviously what our direction's been is rides. So obviously we've gone from 2022 putting in two new rides there. We had three. We did have also the coaster, which we moved on, but we bought the Zamperla Discovery 16, which is extinction known here. that put us on the map for having that bit of thrill ride. So what the direction of that has been is, one brand new ride, a couple of refurbished rides gone in. So they are effectively new additions, but we've got to move with the times and recognise we are a theme park. So obviously rides are important. But then when it comes to sort of the old school theming, all of the even the animatronics, I mean Rumpus Mansion is a great one. I mean, Laura, do you want to give us an update on Rumpus Mansion? I know it's one of your favourite attractions.
It is my favourite attraction. I love it. But it's also a big fandom. So I'll tell you why Rumpus Mansion is so special. I think so many parks have that like one iconic attraction. Partly because the actual experience itself obviously embodies everything that Black Gang Chine is. It is like a spooky house walkthrough with all of these amazing, weird and wonderful like goblin and gargoyle type creatures that are all animatronic and move, and it tells a story as you go through, and it's fantastic. However, what is another part of making Black Gang Chine so unique as a park is it's in an existing building. So Black Gang Chine was a village, and over the years, the DeBell family bought up all of the properties in the village, and they have become part of the park. So the same way the hotel is now our F&B unit, our main F&B offering, Rumpus Mansion is actually within the childhood home of our current owner. So that's where he grew up. He grew up in the park in this magnificent house that's just got the most beautiful oldie-worldie stonework. It, looks and feels very gothic. So whereas other parks perhaps had to manufacture a building to put an attraction like Rumpus Mansion in it, Black Gang just uses its landscape and uses the buildings and everything that it has. So it gives it another layer of being more immersive. It doesn't feel like you've built something and then themed it to look old. Now that really is like a 300-year-old house. That is it. And if you actually could go upstairs in it, which the public can't, like there is still the wallpaper on the walls of how it was decorated as a family home. Like it is the original house. And our chock-a-block, one of our big F&B outlets for the famous Black Gang Donuts, again, that was a little cottage that members of staff used to live in over the years. So I think you just have this next level of immersion at Black Gang Chine. Same way with our landscape. Obviously, it's a huge challenge for us, but it's also a huge opportunity. You walk up to Cowboy Town, the most immersive part of the park, my favorite part to go and people watch up there, and you think you've walked onto a Hollywood set. It's just the cliff. It is that it's just Mother Nature doing its amazing thing. And I think that's what really makes Black Gang Chine so incredibly unique, is it's just our landscape and our buildings and our history. And rather than knock it down, flatten everything and put up fake old buildings, we just build in with the building. It's great.
It's a perfect setting for a theme park, really. You'd like you say, you have theme
Yeah.
parks who spend millions trying to create landscapes, immersive environments, probably trying to recreate what you've got naturally. And I mean, obviously, Alton Towers is the other example of something that has a natural history and a natural setting that you can build on and capitalize on. So yeah, like, why would you not? And it does make you unique, and it does give you character. I need to hear more about these famous Black Gang donuts. I was like, hang on a minute, donuts?
You got to come over and sample them. Just the
Yeah,
smell
you don't need to ask
alone
me
is just
twice.
perfect.
You mentioned in there, obviously, you've got all these animatronics. Dan, I guess this falls into your remit as a general manager to manage the maintenance of things like that. We know animatronics can be temperamental, even modern ones. There must be more of a challenge with older ones that you're trying to keep running and working.
Yeah, I think this is what comes. So, I don't like to talk too much about maintenance in some areas because it can be classed as, oh, it's just maintenance. But with those attractions, whilst they're here year on year, that's absolutely right because over the winter they get worked on, they get thousands of pounds spent on them that people just come back the following season still see in place, as with everything maintenance related. But the older the animatronics and other attractions, the more maintenance they require throughout the season as well. Even on days, Laura's absolutely right. It's not just her favourite attraction and one of my favourite attractions. People live for Rumpus Mansion because of, again, the age of it, how it all looks, the fact that everything has still been maintained and working. So from 8 till 10 in the morning, if you've got an issue, that becomes a priority to fix because as soon as you open those doors, a lot of it you cut to in order to do one one attraction within there, you'd have to probably close the entrance and the exit to get to half of it. So it just becomes a bit of a strain, but also ignites the passion for why it has to be working and why we hold such high standards of that here. I think that's something the team do a really good job of. Some mornings I won't hear about something like that as long as it's, if it's a ride off, so I would, but an attraction like that, it will be coming up to opening. Everything's all good. I get a sort of report into daily. I'll use, obviously, we've got Mabaro for our park checks. And you can see that assignments have been made and resolved before 10 o'clock without even sometimes making it to my ears, which just shows from the team the passion that they have and the importance they know of fixing that.
And Kev, you are the dark ride fanatic of the podcast. He gets very annoyed if a dark ride isn't operating in the way it should. So that must be music to your ears.
Yes, I go around with my crib sheet and, check in these things. But joking aside, no, absolutely. I think for every guest, even if it's your first time visiting Black Gang Chine or it's the 100th time, there's an expectation, isn't there, that you want every guest to experience something as it should. And I think that's important, isn't it, with maintenance and maintaining these attractions so that everyone gets to experience it as you kind of envision it, or even how it was envisioned 50 years ago. So it is such an important part of any interactive walkthrough, dark ride, whatever attraction you've got, that it's working at the capacity you want it to be, isn't that right?
Yeah, no, I think I know Laura, I think, believe she briefly just mentioned it, but the gold award we got for the customer service at last year's UK Theme Park Awards, the maintenance side, whilst they're not customer facing, the importance of that customer journey starts with them. They're the first on site every morning, and the day goes from there. So they play a bigger part, probably what they realise in terms of the guest experience, whilst they might not be the people serving those donuts. It's all ties in together, doesn't it?
And I think it's important that you, as a part, recognise that as well, and you do appreciate the importance of them, and that can make or break a customer service experience. How hard do you find it to recruit and retain that kind of talent and skill on an island?
Mixed, really. I mean, firm believer in terms of obviously industry contacts are key in any industry, but especially our industry, and being on the Isle of Wight is a high importance for us, I'd say. The maintenance team we have are great, and obviously we aren't going to find more ride engineers on the island, being the only place. Well, there are a few smaller rides, but sort of the caliber of rides we've got, things like that are important. So we have good relationships. Well, as locally as Portman's Park, for example, as well, and up and down the country, which is very important for us.
And you mentioned earlier that there has been a shift in focus over the last few years to more ride-based installations. Is that based on a gut feeling, or was that a market research that said, no, this is where we have to go? How did that sort of come about?
Yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to relying on trying or not relying on, sorry, trying to stay where you are. I mean, the park, the water slide that was in, I believe, went in the 90s, early 90s. The barrels, pirate barrels, which are, teacups, sort of ride the same. And obviously, we did have the coaster, which was, again, on the map. People think, oh, you've got a roller coaster at theme park. That fits well, obviously. But then the move of that was aging, move that on to get two new rides, then a brand new ride, and a couple of refurbished ones as well, which we already owned. I think the reason for doing that is because you can't sit still. So there is an expectation from island residents, and whilst they are, as Laura said, probably only 25% of our visitors every year, you can't keep doing what, the same every year. You've got to add, and you've got to justify then with the ongoing forever fixed costs that are in this industry now. You've got to add to try and to make the business more stable.
I guess it's a double-edged sword, because you do put these new installations in and rides come in, and yes, that makes it more marketable, I guess. It makes Laura's job a little bit easier to have a song and dance about something exciting. But that does come with they come with their own issues, and they are more temperamental than, a static installation. So I guess you've got to balance that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Laura can probably comment on. I think we've got some very good procedures in place. Anyway, for the sort of the comms between marketing, engineering, myself included in that. So I think any time that we do sort of, as with any park, have those little niggles, I think it's pretty well organised, and I think Laura would probably agree on that. Or if you want to add anything there, Laura.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's a real, like you say, as Dan has said, you can't just stand still. You do have to move forward. You do have to, not just for yourself as a part, but your audience. They will love you. Of course they do. And we have really, really deep fans, but you've got to give people a reason to come back. And I think expectations from consumers now are so huge, and I think because of everything else that's going on in the world, and because people are more thoughtful with their money, you've got to give them an incredible experience, and they're more likely to choose you if it's not a complete replica of the last day out that they had. Even if that last day out was phenomenal, they want to see something different. I think the general rule at Black Gang is that we don't reinvent, we reimagine. And I think, as Dan said, the train ride is a really great example of that, where yes, it is a new addition to Black Gang Chime, but it's been completely tied back to what we know everybody loves about Black Gang Chime. As much as, of course, we'd all love to see a roller coaster back, of course we would. The coaster that we had wasn't massive. It wasn't a huge. It wasn't a huge one. Would a huge one fit with Black Gang Chime? Probably not, actually. No, it isn't the right offering to have there. But putting in pirate ships that are really well themed and live on Pirate Cove, where we've also got static wooden play ships that people go on and play, and the kids have got cannons. Well, I say the kids, the adults as well. You can all squirt each other with the cannons and stuff. And Pirate Cove is our beautiful clifftop part of the park that's open for our summer events, where we have those and you're looking out onto the sea. So again, it's making sure that whatever we do bring in is still very Black Gang. I think other parks are able, and don't get me wrong, of course they do a great job of theming things, but it wouldn't make sense for us to bring something really big, really wild in. We're never going to be that type of park, and I don't think our fans would want us to be either. Yeah,
Josh was saying the same thing last week, wasn't he, Kev, about Creeley, and when he's talking about installations and what he could buy or couldn't buy, but he has to come back to, well, what does our audience want? And it's not a 200-foot Intamin giga coaster. It's it just wouldn't work, because as he said, you'd build that. And then, so yeah, you might get thrill seekers come for that, but then there's nothing else for them. So you're going to annoy your core audience who can't go on it, and at the same time annoy the thrill seekers who go, well, I've come for that one ride, but now there's nothing else.
Yeah, because I think ultimately on that note, everything's about capacity in terms of your offering. So yeah, we all know for the price of four rides, or for the price of one ride or four, depending on what it is. So to be able to offer more is also better value for money, in my opinion.
And I like how, obviously, with Black Gang Chine, you lean into your history as well. So with the whole smugglers and obviously you've got the really famous entrance way with the giant smuggler with the barrel, and that's great that you still lean into that with all the pirates and everything. And I think that's its appeal, isn't it? It's finding that balance of what you're installing and why you're installing it, and does it make sense for this park? And obviously for Black Gang Chine, a lot of its charm is in its quirky themed, like walkthroughs and towns and themed areas. So, I guess that's again going back to that question about balance, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of people associate play areas with playgrounds. So vertical structures with swings, ropes, net bridges, things like that. And whilst we do have a small amount of those, we have Cowboy Town, we have Area 5, Dinosaur Area, we have Nursery Land, we have such large themed areas that that is your playground. And I think people can sort of forget that when you look at a park map, it's, you see different areas. And on that note, the new park map we did this year, which I'm sure Laura will talk about in a minute, is excellent because it shows that just the amount of theming, and everywhere you move around the park, you enter a new zone. And I think it's almost like when you just walk down one single path between the rides, it's like there's no theming for 30 yards, and you're almost shocked because you just enter different areas all the time. But that land of imagination, that sort of immersive play, is the playground. I think that's what Black Gang's really good at.
Yeah, it's almost like one massive playground, one safe environment where if you've got kids, it's like, yeah, come on, let's run wild, and you can go where you want. It doesn't have to be confined. Let's talk about this park map then. Now I love a park map. I'm a theme park nerd. We love a park map. We love a printed park map, by the way. Is that an option?
It is absolutely. It's
Oh, good.
essential.
Good.
Yeah,
We're
no,
going.
please. Yeah, we're gonna get you guys over, haven't we? You need to come and experience
Yes.
it. Yeah, no, we. So what's really fascinating about Black Game Chine is because of its landscape and because of its terrain, it's really hard on flat 2D paper to get a decent wayfinder because everything is very higgledy-piggledy. It's on different levels, it's uphills, there's trees everywhere, there's planting everywhere. And it's actually quite hard. Like if you send a drone up above Black Gang Chine, a lot of it looks like a forest. You know, there's huge tree canopies everywhere, and actually it's really hard to plot the actual roads and paths that you walk through. I always had a bit of a bugbear with our park map when I joined because it just didn't make sense as a wayfinder. I didn't like it. And whilst I get that theme park maps and attraction maps, it's almost like you want it to look exciting and visual and the wayfinding second, which I totally understand. It has a time and place, and you know, you might make certain things bigger because you want people to go to that area, all that kind of jazz, but it also needed to make sense. And it was last summer when we have our big event on Pirate Cove, and I was just stood out there. I think we might have been doing some filming, and I had about three people say to me, "How do we get to Cowboy Town?" And to me, Cowboy Town is the best place of Black Gang Chine. It is the most incredible land. Everyone should spend at least an hour up there. How have you got to this point in the day and you've not been to Cowboy Town? How have you missed it? Clearly, we've got an issue here with our wayfinding. We need to fix that. I think the other thing that was the issue with the previous map is because it had been done a few years back when a new attraction was new, that was obviously inflated and made to look really big on the map. That's no longer the key new attraction. Actually, some of our newer attractions, because they'd just been added in, you know, to the main map, they were quite small. It didn't really work, so it all needed redoing. But the other issue is Black Gang Chine, when you come into it, it's almost like a J. It's like a hockey stick shape. Like when you come in through the smuggler, you either go that way up the hill or you come this way and it curves back round, and that's kind of our rides area. But we had a landscape map and that made no sense. And I actually went back through, as Dan said, where I want to say we're hoarders, where we just like to keep. We're sentimental. We like to keep hold of things. And I thought, I'm just going to flick back through some old leaflets. And it was a leaflet probably from about 15 plus years ago. And the map was portrait. And I looked at it and I was like, this makes sense. I can work this out. I know how to navigate the park now from looking at this. Why did we ever change it? What happened? I'm like, no, okay, we need to sort this out. And we're really lucky. We work with an incredible designer and illustrator, Courtney Summers, who people may know from LinkedIn. She went viral last year, and we're lucky enough that we work with her. And I said to her, Courtney, I need a new map. I said, but I want the cliff back in it. I want the sea in it, because we've completely removed the edge of the park. And actually, looking at a map and then seeing, oh yeah, that's right, the sea is supposed to be to the right of me, suddenly makes everything so much more easy to navigate. So I was like, let's put the cliff back in. And there's kind of always been a bit of controversy around that, because our cliff does cause a lot of controversy and we get lots of press about it, not always in the most positive light. But I was like, no, it makes sense. And actually, again, it's part of who we are. We can't escape the fact that we are on top of a cliff. Let's own it. Let's lean into it. And let's embrace the fact that that's what makes us so unique. So, yeah, we have a beautiful park map now that is not only navigatable, it feels more Black Gang as well. We've gone back to old school hand-drawn illustrations of some of these attractions that have been in the park for 40, 50 plus years, that are the iconic bits that everyone loves. So likewise, if you're a family coming in now, the kids might open the map and get excited to see the pirate ship ride, but mum and dad, who may have come sort of 20, 30 years ago, would see an illustration of the Mouth of Hell, which is a big fiberglass attraction, and be like, oh my God, the Mouth of Hell is still here. That's amazing. We've got to go there. So things are really easy to spot, and we've really embraced those parts that perhaps historically people might have been like, oh, you don't really want to show that off, it's a bit dated. But no, it's nostalgic. We've maintained it. It looks nice. Things still get painted. It's still very well presented. You wouldn't know it was 50, 60 years old, but it triggers something within people. So we want those to feature on there. We want people to see them, and they should be part of our marketing because they are part of our park.
Yeah, and I think too many parks are too quick to get rid of anything that might be a bit old. And when I go to Efteling, I love that there are all these really classic attractions. I said in the vlog that I made about there are adults at this park without children who clearly have grown up with this park and they've just come on a day out to experience it because it's taken them back to a point in their lives where they were younger, and it still brings back that memory. So I think you're absolutely right to lean into that. Love a couple of things about that as well. One, that you've got a printed map. I mean, theme park fans love a souvenir, and they are great, but
Absolutely.
also means you're not on your phone all day trying to work your way around. You have actually got a physical thing, and kids love that as well. Like you say, like being able to go, oh, I'm gonna let go down here, and also that you haven't used AI to do it. You've
No.
used an illustrator, and you've done it properly. And it's a bugbear in the theme park industry at the moment that things are going the other way. And I think, for a small park, for you to embrace that and go, no, we are going to do it right. We're going to lean into our heritage and we are going to use an illustrator to do our park map. And we're going to get that park map printed. I love that. I think that is your point of difference. And that is the kind of thing that's going to set you apart and make people think this is a, this is a day out that I want to go on, a quality day out, and it's a team who really care about the product. And it does shine through in the end. So yeah, absolutely love that for you guys. In terms of you've mentioned the cliff, and it doesn't, it's a I suppose a curse, and like you say, at the same time something that is iconic for you. How difficult is that for you from a marketing point of view to deal with?
It's a real mixed bag. So I would say this winter we faced our biggest challenge in that not a lot happens on the Isle of Wight in the winter. It kind of all shuts down. It's pretty quiet. And I'll go ahead and say it, people get bored and people like to make mountains out of molehills. And we had a period over the winter where I think it happened across most of the country. Was it January where it like rained every day in January? Like we hit 2026. I remember seeing like the news reports, like there hasn't been a dry day yet in 2026. And
That's
it's really
right,
bad.
yeah.
So when obviously that happens, everything looks worse, right? So we've got parts of the cliff that it's completely, I'm no geologist, but it's made up from different materials at different points in the park. So there are parts of it that are hard rock, chalk is absolutely not going anywhere. There's parts on the outskirts that are made up of slipper clay, and you do get movement from that. Now, we have got local drone enthusiasts that like to send a drone up and take some pictures and take some videos. And then love to put those on our local community groups because the Isle of Wight obviously has a very small knit community and they go wild. It's like the clickbait of the Daily Mail headline, like people love it and it goes wild and it blows up. So we all of a sudden I was getting inundated with these press requests. It was, oh my God, has there been a landslip? Is it what's been moved? What's been, what's been lost? It's awful, it's tragic. And I had to phone Dan and I was like, Dan, has something happened that I'm not aware of? Because apparently there's been a big landslide, we've lost attractions. And he was like, no, there's nothing like that's happened. And as it is, we are really prepared, as prepared as you can be for it. Okay, this is something that we have dealt with for 183 years. No one knows the Black Gang landscape better than the people that work at Black Gang Chine. It is something we plan for every year. We know that over time things do erode. That is just nature. We cannot escape that. We have huge precautionary measures within the park. We have movement sensors, and we also now use a fantastic local drone company that isn't just like videography drones. It does heat mapping and 3D mapping, and it gives us reports, and we can see exactly month to month, or we can bring the frequency of that forward to check what has moved and what has changed over that time. So of course you never know when something is going to happen, but we are really aware of our landscape and we do plan for that every single year. We know there are parts of the park that there would be no point going and putting a new attraction in there now. We know we need to put it further inland. It may be that we're planning a 5-year plan that means we know, okay, cool, probably next winter we might want to look at relocating this, knowing that nothing might happen to it for 5 years, but we want to get ahead of that curve because we know how precious these things are to our fans. We never want to be in that position where things go. I think it was back in 1994 that there was a big extreme landslide that no one was expecting, and there was a big load of movement, and some of our dinosaurs were lost, and Cowboy Town ended up being relocated to where it is now, which actually makes so much more sense and looks so much better up there. I'm just going to say, sometimes these things are like a blessing in disguise, and you come out better off at the end of it. But yeah, it's something that people like to, I would say, over dramatize, but that's press and PR, right? That's what it is. People want the big, exciting headline. They don't just want Black Gang Chine sees like 10 centimeters of slippage this year. They want it's going, go this year or you won't be able to see it again. Like, I can promise you it isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And I don't think people also realize how much land we own, and because of our unusual terrain, how many little pockets of space there are that we can just keep shuffling things around a little bit. And that in itself makes things more exciting, because it's a new route, it's a new path, it can feel like a completely new space, even if we've just taken out a few plants, rerouted a path, and just made it feel more exciting.
Yeah,
So
unfortunately, yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? We in the industry, any slight tiny little thing that media like to pick up on, it's then blown up, and it's unfortunately it's one of those things, isn't it? But I mean, what's the most recent thing you've had to move? Is there anything recently that you've had to move, or is everything okay at the moment?
it's so this winter we moved Evolution, which was our drop tower, and this is actually a really good opportunity to clarify, because again, everyone thinks it came down because of the cliff and it was too close. That's part of the story. So the ride had to come down for maintenance anyway, which, because of its location, involves the hiring of two different types of crane and lots of machinery, which, again, if anyone in the industry knows how expensive those things are. We're not a big park. We're not sat on millions of pounds in the bank. And actually, sometimes it's just more economical to say, okay, we can pay to then get the crane back in to put it back up for this season. And it would probably be okay for another few seasons. It's definitely, like I say, in that kind of like 5-year-ish plan that we would want to move it anyway. So rather than spend treble, quadruple in the up and down of it, let's just retire it out for a season. Let's work out where could it go, where could it be repositioned. But ultimately, was there any point spending, the tens of thousands of pounds we would have to just to put it up in a location, only for it to be there for a season and have to pay those tens and tens of thousands of pounds again to bring it back down, relocate it, and put it somewhere else? Or are we better off just to spend this year completely stripping it back, working out what its next evolution is going to be, where it makes sense for it to go, what theme, etc., etc. So yeah, Evolution did move, and we put up a fence at the back of our hedge maze, because that's quite close to the edge now. The bulk of the maze, absolutely fine, but we've just brought it forward a couple of rows, popped a little fence up there so people can still experience the maze. It's still a huge hit with all of our guests. But again, it's just that forward planning and making sure we're ahead of the curve and everything is completely safe and secure for all of our guests to enjoy.
Yeah, and I just will add to that, if you're going to take a ride out, the best time to do it is when you're putting another one in. So obviously our train ride went in, so you're not decreasing the offering. You had six rides last year, still got six this year. That becomes seven next year or the year after, then great.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, makes absolutely perfect sense. So looking ahead, is that something that, I mean, I guess you guys have got plans, and maybe you can tell me, maybe you can't. But what are you looking at in terms of insulation? Are you looking at, yes, there'll be another new addition next year, or will you have a bit of a fallow year because you've had two new rides, the last two seasons?
I know it's probably not an answer either way, but it's still kind of in the process of gathering all the costs. For example, we still have Evolution, the drop tower. We know it needs a bit of money spent on it, just due to the ongoing maintenance of rides. But I think as well, it's a case of, as Laura just said, when with Black Gang, and then not to focus too much on the location, where you want to put it, for example, will depend on the current, electrical supply to that area, the ground that's there, the footings that need to go, and all the costs that come with it. And it's also a case of a bigger plan of what else do we want to do in that area? Because the last thing we want to do is effectively fence ourselves in and then think, oh, if we could just put that 20 meters to the left, we could have had an access to something else beyond it. So I think we're still up for debate in a couple of areas that we've got. We've got a nice gardens area that people absolutely loved, and the old sawmill gardens, it's been closed now for well, all my time at Blackgang, but a few years before as well. So that area, you know, has been maintained. So whilst it's shut to the public, it still gets maintained. There's sort of access to the water slide around there. So those sort of bits, and we've just done in the past 3 years, we've done three ride installs. So I think the customers and the Arlott residents have seen that sort of commitment on that front. And I think just in terms of building the budgets, you can never, you know, like taking the drop tower out this winter, which we decided to do, we had a project ongoing. You can never be, as Laura said, it's one of the wettest winters we've had. You can never be sure of how that budget changes due to the conditions on site as well. So
Yeah.
there's lots to factor in of contingency there for, you know, for better or worse. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of debate of what we want to do with things. We're not against either way. We just don't want to rush and ultimately see what the summer does as well, and not to sort of go into too much depth there. But you know, the Isle of Wight tourism, our main focus is working with everyone else to make sure that stays strong, you know,
Yeah.
or ultimately hopefully gets better. So
Yeah.
there's that would affect ongoing budgets, you know, being plain and simple.
Yeah. And it's really important to remember, I think, that when you are a small park, these things are tight, and you don't have like big invested deep pockets somewhere that you can go, oh, we just need an extra few million for this. You know, you are, it's such a balance all the time. And obviously there are pressures on businesses at the moment just to survive. Why do you think that Blackgang Chine has survived? We've seen the loss of smaller parks. Even in the last few years, we've lost them in the UK on the mainland. Why, how have you guys managed to weather that?
I would say, you know, this credit to the business owner, Alec. I mean, he has a strong commitment not just to Blackgang but to the island. I think so that's something he's always sort of, you know, Blackgang is the Isle of Wight, which is a good mindset to have. But I think as well, we've technically in areas upsized, in other areas downsized, and sometimes those processes aren't easy to navigate, but we've ultimately had to adapt in those areas to get where we are. So some things are more enjoyable to do than others, but that's I'd say the I mean, look, me and Laura sort of both started our Blackgang journey 2 months apart, so we've kind of been in it together from the same point. I don't know what your sort of viewpoint is in those 4 years, Laura, but I think we've had to adapt to a lot. But one thing that's clear to me is the passion that we've sort of been on board with is ultimately why we survive, because I think the work rate we put in every single day. I mean, I'm not a person to say I work 7 days a week, but I will be available if I'm not on site for the better cause of the business, and that's what I think we all share.
Yeah, and I think I'd imagine that's quite a nice trend that you see a lot amongst a lot of small parks, especially the family owned. I mean, Blackgang Chine is fifth generation owned. It's the oldest in the UK, third in the world, but there's some debate around that. But it's in the same family. Like that passion and that legacy is absolutely huge. And when you've been around that long, you know, to try and compare it to another consumer brand that are just they've been around for donkeys, you know, heritage brand, even like Jaguar, like as a car, you know, long-standing brands that have a brand. You know, we're not just a park, we are a brand because we mean something to people and we exist in the memory of millions of people that have visited us in that 183 years. And I think it is the passion from the people within the business to make sure that that doesn't die. Because, you know, the people that came to Blackgang in its heyday, when, you know, the Isle of Wight was in its heyday and it was the go-to destination, that generation is dying out now. So we've either got to have relied on the fact that they instilled it in their children and now their children, that it was such a special place to go. They want to keep up that family tradition and that legacy. And we do see that people literally, we call it like an annual pilgrimage to Blackgang Chine. People have to have their holiday on the Isle of Wight and they have to come to Blackgang Chine. And we get messages from families like that every year. And it is what keeps our passion going because people love it so much. But of course, we have adapted, as Dan says, not just in park to the way consumers want to experience things now, making sure we have got something for everyone. So you've got the fiberglass statues for the for the mums and dads and the nans and granddads that remember it, but you've got the new moving animatronics for the kids, or you've got the rides for the kids that expect a totally different experience these days. But of course, we've adapted the marketing as well. As you say, it's not enough now just to have leaflets in service stations anymore. We've had to go completely digital. We've had to catch up with the times, make sure that our UX and our customer journey and everything is spot on, and we've got no friction within our purchasing process, that we're getting the level of coverage that we need, that we're using influencers, that we're using PR. And just making sure we do the best possible job that we can with what we've got. Because, like, as Dan said, as you guys will know, within this industry, you've got groups, you've got corporates, you've got big people with huge teams and huge deep pockets. And then you've got small little independents that really are small little independents with very small budgets. So if you don't have the right people in the team pushing that passion and that drive for the park, it probably wouldn't have worked. But I think we always say it consumes you, doesn't it, Dan? We say, like, Black Gang Chine, it just, once it's got a hold of you don't ever want to move on from it. Like, and you want to see it through, and you want it to win. I want it to be here. I want it to be my children's first job. You know, we pride ourselves on giving a lot of Ireland residents their first job at Black Gang. You come and, you know, spend a summer with us scooping ice cream or doing whatever it might be. You know, I want it here for the next all those generations, so that my grandkids are also going to scoop ice cream and getting their first job. It means so much to so many people. We don't want to be the ones to stop that.
Oh,
And I can
I'm
imagine as
sure
well as like
we're.
looking at people enjoying themselves at the park is probably up there, would you say,
Oh my
Laura, is like
God,
the your favorite thing about it as
best
well?
thing. I just think, like, how joyful that our product is joy. That's we are selling memories for people that will stay with them from kids now experiencing it through to adulthood. They will recall that day. We all do it. I think that is the joy of working in the attractions industry, is that is literally the product you are selling. And yeah, nothing makes me happier than going out into the park when it's busy, up to Cowboy Town. I'll go and get myself a drink, stand in a little bit of shade, and just people watch. And to watch fully grown men don a cowboy hat and a bandana and chase their kids around with fun snaps. And I just think, how amazing for them, because I always think, oh, I bet you've got some really important corporate job back in London. You're in a suit, you're in a skyscraper, and now you're on holiday being a kid again with your kid, making memories that all of you are never going to forget. And I think it's a privilege. I think the fact that we get to create that and be a part of people's family memories, what a privilege that is.
Yeah, including our
Absolutely.
own as well, isn't it? It's, you know, it's
Oh, yeah.
my little boy's only 16 months old, but when we opened the train ride, well, obviously he's not big enough to go on it yet. It's having him here that evening, sort of enjoying the water pillow and seeing him for the first sort of time,
Yeah.
on his own, sort of walking and enjoying it, was a proud moment for me. Makes me
Oh.
sort of think those sort of amount of
Yeah.
effort put in is
Yeah.
really rewarding. That's
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
You've experienced it for your family, and you know that others will as well. Right. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on. Before you go, Laura, I'm just going to put you on the spot, as the marketing person. For anyone who's not been to Black Gang Chine, why should they come and see you this summer?
Because we are not like any other theme park. If you've got a vision in your head of Alton Towers, Parton's Park, we are not that. Come and experience the most unique setting, the most unique experiences, the most diverse range of attractions for something for everyone from 0 to 100. Come and experience it, because there's nothing quite like it. Literally, seascapes, panoramic seascapes, whilst you're on a 360 gyro swing ride. Oh my God, where else can you feel like you're about to fly off a cliff? It's amazing.
Amazing.
And there's amazing donuts as well. So, I mean, I'm
Yes, get your
sold.
donuts.
Get me on that ferry immediately. Laura, Dan, it's been absolutely brilliant having you on Parkcast. Thanks for being so open and honest and really sharing your passion for Black Gang Chine. I think I'm definitely inspired to go. I hope everyone listening is as well. If you have enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Let us know what you thought. And if you haven't already, hit subscribe so that whenever I release a new one, you will be the first to hear about it. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.